from the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G and Ursula Show with G. Scott and Ursula Voitin.
Welcome, welcome. Happy Fresh Friday to all of you. Thank you for joining us on the G and Ursula Show. G is off today, but look who's in. It's
I get
Jake
to be here.
Skorheim
thank
on
you
a Fresh Friday.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's fun.
Love to have you in here. We have a very busy show. A lot of you are traveling today, so we are going to be your friends today while you try to head out to the airport, head out to the ferries. We just ask that you have a lot of patience because you're going to need it this weekend. As always, we invite you to text us on our state roofing text line, 888-973-5476. 888-973-CHIRO. Let's get right to it. Our top stories brought to you by Wayscar Ford Isuzu in Auburn. So, Jake, we're going to start with a very sad story out of Everett, where twin infants got sick after being exposed to what is believed to be fentanyl in a hotel room. Snohomish County Sheriff's deputies were called to this hotel after the mother of an 11-month-old boy said that her son was unconscious, and she blamed cleaning chemicals at first. But Sheriff spokeswoman Courtney O'Keefe tells Cairo 7 TV that is not what medics found when they tried to revive the child.
The baby was not responsive to exposure for toxic chemicals. At the time, medics did administer Narcan to the 11-month-old baby, and he regained consciousness at that time.
So that little boy, his twin sister, and their 11-year-old brother were all taken to the hospital. The twins did test presumptive positive for fentanyl, but toxicology reports have not yet come back. After serving a search warrant, sheriff's detectives say they found fentanyl and meth in that hotel room. The kids' parents have not yet been arrested because they have to wait for those toxicology results to come back. But
this is one of those stories that you hear, and there's just it's just one of those depressing stories. You know, when you think about the situation that might lead to a family, I have three kids. My wife and I have three kids. Mm-hmm. You imagine this 11-year-old. Who they have an 11-year-old child and then two twin 11-month-olds
living
in a hotel room with their parents. That's already a situation that's not very desirable. And then add drugs on top of that if that was the problem and the kids didn't just find these. And that does happen. Kids pick up drugs in parks. That's every parent's worst nightmare when you take your kids out to public spaces is that they might pick something up. My heart just breaks for this family, though.
It does. And then you start going down the road of, okay, so what should happen to the parents if you find out, well, yes, in fact, it was, like it appears to be, fentanyl. They're doing meth. They're in a hotel room. I mean, obviously not safe for the kids. What should happen to the parents? Right now, the kids are in protective custody, so that whole thing's going to have to play out. But again, this family was living in a hotel already, allegedly doing drugs in a cramped space. Young children with you. I mean, this is one of those examples of why, in my opinion, mandatory drug treatment has to be part of any plan to get homeless people into shelter if they're dealing with addiction.
100%. I mean, well, you're talking about dealing with somebody who doesn't maybe have the ability to make that decision for themselves. And now, like we're seeing in this story, these people oftentimes have children.
Right.
People who are completely dependent on them for their safety and their well-being.
Well,
they're not making those decisions for those kids.
Right. And one of the arguments is always, you can't force treatment on somebody. And
you can encourage it pretty strongly.
And you can't expect to make that a requirement. I mean, I think that is one of the debates. And, Chef, you can come in on this, too. That is one of the debates, which is do you provide shelter and not worry about the drug treatment if it's just because a lot of people will say, I don't want to do the shelter then because you're going to force me into drug treatment.
Sure.
And in my opinion, it has to be part of that equation.
There's where I split from you is because, I mean, how successful do you think someone is going to be at getting off of drugs if they're living under an overpass or in a tent? It's 40 degrees in the middle of November. You're saying go ahead and stay clean and sober, but the only way that like literally your body can feel any kind of decency is if you get back on those drugs. Now, these parents probably will have to go through treatment, at least if they want to get their kids back, because I assume if it is found to be fentanyl, Child Protective Services will become involved. They will take the kids away, and perhaps this will be an opportunity as a turning point for the family. It's also a reminder for parents out there that kids get into stuff. I mean, my 2-year-old literally got into a box of pills the other day. They were just supplements, thankfully. But this happens all the time. And by the way, if you are one of the parents that gives your kid those melatonin gummies, because this is rampant, kids get into those, and the amount of melatonin overdoses that are happening in this country is up like 300 to 400%.
Because they're like chewy and they taste good.
Well, yeah, I mean, how many times did you go eat 5 or 6 of the Flintstone vitamins that you had as a kid? Yeah. Yes. Imagine eating 400 melatonin gummies.
You know, the scary thing too
for
parents, like I was at a baseball game last night. My oldest son was in, you know, he's in playoff baseball right now. Go Silverhawks. And we're at the park, and I have a 3-year-old who is 3, and so he wants to run around and do everything. And he's going down around, he's going under the bleachers and just, you know, being a little tornado like 3-year-olds are.
Yeah.
And now as a parent, it's just built into my radar. Make sure he's not picking up anything. And my worry, and I don't know if this is, you know, illogical or maybe it's very logical based on the stories we're seeing, but my worry is like he could pick up drugs. He wants to run into the bushes around this area. There could be like... That could have been a former dwelling place of somebody who was doing drugs.
It's true.
You have to be so vigilant with your kids. The scary thing is you cannot turn your eyes away from them for a second.
It's true. Well, so imagine in these cases, and you think, well, this is just a one-off, or it's not happening that much. In this hotel situation with the parents living in a hotel. But this just happened recently in another Snohomish County hotel.
Yes.
Detectives believe the mom was smoking fentanyl in the hotel room, and her 1-year-old got exposed, they believe, and that baby didn't make it.
But doesn't
so,
again,
I mean, it's just it's a reminder, too, that, I mean, doctors are seeing a huge increase in the number of kids, babies that are being exposed to fentanyl, which is also speaks to the importance of having that naloxone available, which we posted it on our Facebook page telling people how you can get access to it. And the response
just to carry it around with
you. And the response was, well, how about you just tell people not to do drugs, which is obvious.
Yeah.
But
you still take your kids to a public space.
Exactly.
And this then speaks to the larger problem that we're seeing in these big cities like Seattle, is how do you discourage the rampant drug use? How do you discourage these people? Because then it bleeds out in these other communities.
Yeah. Oh, come on. It's not like drug use starts in Seattle and then all of a sudden the addicts move out to Duval.
I'm not saying the addicts are all moving out to Duval. Yeah. But if you go in Duval, are you going to see more people using drugs and on the sidewalk in Duval?
Are you going to see more people in Seattle or in Duval?
That's
a population
statistic. We're saying the same thing. There's a bigger population, and you know, you just need to be... How do you discourage this from happening?
Well, what the other thing it points to is just the... desperate need for more treatment facilities, which we have talked about quite a bit on the show. We're just sorely inadequate in that area. Okay, I'm going to move on, though, because as bad as our homeless problem is here, it might even be worse in Portland, Oregon. But now that city has reached a tentative settlement in a lawsuit that claimed it was violating the Americans with Disabilities Act by not removing tents from sidewalks. So if the settlement is approved, Portland will be required now to spend at least $3 million a year, up to $8 million this year, and then $3 million after that, to remove at least 500 sidewalk camps each year. Tiana Tozer is one of the 10 plaintiffs, and she spoke to KGW.
We have a large number of people with disabilities, and we choose to live here for the public transportation system. I always felt that Portland was a very disability-friendly city, and then all of a sudden it was like, it's not. And so then I started calling around, and nobody would answer my phone calls. And then I started hearing from other people with disabilities that they were, my friend Mike, who's blind, was running into people, being attacked, stepping in human feces, stepping over people and not knowing if they were dead, guide dogs having to like pick through the needles and everything.
You know, you don't even think about that. I mean, and shame on me for not thinking about that even more often. Like,
totally.
Hello? How do you get around if you are in a wheelchair?
Or this blind guy she's describing?
Right. So the city of Portland is going to also set up a 24-hour line to report those sidewalk camps, and the city would be required to address it within 5 days.
You know what's amazing about this is that 500 number. At least 500 camps.
A year.
Sidewalk camps, right?
Yeah.
That's what they're talking about.
Yeah.
A year.
Yeah. So, yeah, how
Portland
did we get to that
point? Used to be such a beautiful city. In many ways... just as, if not more beautiful than Seattle. They've got the rivers, and it's just a gorgeous city. I've got family that lives down there. We get down there quite a bit.
Yeah.
And the transformation of that city over the past few years is astounding.
Yeah, maybe the degradation of it, right?
The degradation of the city. Yeah. Yeah. And you're just hoping that, I mean, something like this is great.
Well,
I hope it works.
I wanted to. What was your reaction, Chef? Because when I read this, I couldn't help but say, well, good. I mean, sadly, it took a lawsuit filed by people with disabilities to point out, wait a minute, you know, there are other issues too.
Well, Portland seems to have even less desire in enforcement of clearing tents and sidewalks, et cetera, than even Seattle does. So I thought, you know, it's a good thing for Portland. Maybe this will provide some impetus to the city of Seattle to remove them when they are on sidewalks. I know they're already doing that. Yes. The problem is, like, here's what the cities have to be afraid of. I'm going to get sued by people, and there's actually precedent for this now. So you're going to bump a lot of these to the top of the priority list. The other thing that I would say is I'm really glad that we're finally paying attention to the needs of the disabled. And I'll point you to a story from last year from David Croman in the Seattle Times that looked at ADA compliance of sidewalks in 30 Washington cities and counties. And in all of those jurisdictions, less than half of the roads and sidewalks complied with ADA standards. So the idea that this is the only issue facing disabled people, this is one issue for sure. But simply getting on and off the sidewalk in the first place is already a massive problem. And apparently cities are not worried about being sued in those circumstances, but potentially they could be because of the homeless.
Yeah.
Let's pay more attention.
Exactly. Okay, well, I'm going to give you one more story because this one had us kind of scratching our heads. Residents at a senior living center are furious now about this sprawling homeless encampment in South Seattle that has become a magnet for crime. Arrowhead Gardens resident Diane Radishat spoke with Como 4 News. She says this encampment is more like an occupation.
There's gunshots we hear almost every single night. We had someone, you know, that defecated in one of our washing machines in one of our laundry rooms, which is just unconscionable. So you have a bobcat over there clearing property. They were felling trees. This is state property. How, you know, I think they have a lot of nerve to be felling trees. And why are they doing that in the first place?
So Como 4 News says this homeless camp has a bunch of RVs on it. Residents have built wooden stairs and fencing between the road and their RVs.
I think it's interesting that they're putting up a fence.
Okay,
they
want to
delineate their property.
That's the thing that stood out to you.
Right?
I mean, they're just basically
like claiming
taking
the space
over.
And they're saying, I want to make sure that nobody gets on my property. I'm going to put up a little fence.
I mean, this is outrageous. And by the way,
the excavator is a very strange thing to see in a homeless camp.
Do you remember just a couple of days ago, did we not do a story about how me, as a property owner in Seattle, I got to get permission before I can fell some trees?
Oh, you think there aren't other private property owners in Seattle who are doing things out of code or without proper,
I mean, this is where you're giving more priority to the people who are in this homeless camp than you are to these, and that's how they feel.
The
people in the senior living center.
And they should feel that way. They should feel very upset. I have my in-laws are of this age, and they require help to do things that they used to be able to do. Like anytime I'm over there, I'm basically just changing light bulbs. And this is what they have to do. So the idea that they're able to deal with these neighbors, you can't ask them to do that. They moved into a neighborhood like this so they don't have to have those problems.
Well,
and
exactly.
Now you got people next door.
Exactly.
So the hobbit huts.
So here is the, you know, and again, I don't want to ever come across as someone who doesn't care about the homeless, but
everybody cares about the homeless.
Yes. And, but it's just gotten to the point where why do you give them so much more leeway and so much more grace than you know, people who, like these seniors who are you know, now having to deal with defecation. What was that? I mean, someone pooping in their...
Pooped in the laundry machine.
Oh, okay. So the response, though, from WashDOT, because this is Washington Department of Transportation...
Property. Yeah.
And so I was trying to read the long statement and boil it down.
Did you think of their statement first?
Yeah, so basically they're saying, it's not our fault. Okay, homelessness is a complex issue with no easy solutions. That was the start.
Okay.
And so in order to remove the camp, basically they're saying they have to be able to offer shelter and services to people who are living there. They have to have a place to put their stuff. They have to make it safe for their own work crews to clean out this camp, and then they have to restore that property.
So this is WashDOT's property, and they're basically saying this is not our problem.
Basically, they say we can only clear it with the help of other entities, other cities and other counties and other partners, is how they put it. And all these other things have to – it's a big, huge deal to have to clear something like that is what they're saying.
Yeah, of course it is. But it's also a problem that they let it get to that point in the first place. So I wonder what they would do if somebody walked into the laundry room of the retirement center there and they grabbed a shovel and a pair of plastic gloves and they scooped whatever was in the washing machine, put it in a plastic bag and sent it to WashDot. I'm not saying that they should do that, but these people are having to deal with that. That's on their doorstep.
Yeah. I'm not saying someone should do that. Someone may be inspired.
I don't recommend anybody send any bags of feces to anybody, but that's ridiculous that these people are having to deal with this problem. And a bobcat. Do you know how tough it is to get a bobcat in there?
Right. And it's those stories where I say, there are people there with skills. There are people there
clearly
who could be working and having jobs and being, you know, go in the path of becoming independent. And this is where you feel like, you know, government is enabling people to continue to live like that at the expense of others who shouldn't be having to deal with that.
And I doubt they're living super healthy lives in these camps.
Oh, no.
They're encouraging a good, long, healthy life.
Exactly. Okay, still ahead, we are going to talk about the Seattle City Attorney, Ann Davison, who is making it known that she wants to be able to prosecute public drug use and possession cases now that the state has a new law. So let's get into that. I haven't had your take on that, so we'll get into that. That's next on the G and Ursula Show. Back to the G and Ursula Show. G is off today. Jake Skorheim is in. And we have talked about the drug possession law and this issue quite a bit, but I want to get your take, Jake, because Seattle City Attorney Ann Davison is calling on the city council now to follow the state's lead and criminalize public drug use. As you may recall, the special session of the legislature, it was called because during the regular session, they weren't able to come up with a law. So now they did, and it made public drug use a gross misdemeanor. And Davison says she wants Seattle to do the same. So other mayors around the state have said that they will either follow or they were coming up with their own laws in the event that we didn't have something on the books, right, come this summer. So we had Seattle Mayor Bruce Harrell on our show prior to the special session, and we asked him about public drug use.
My baseline vision is this. No one wants to see people smoking fentanyl. Let's just be clear on that. I do not want to walk down the streets and see any open air drug use at all. So part of my executive order makes it crystal clear, we're going to aggressively go after people bringing in these drugs, pouring them into our streets, working with the DEA, the U.S. Attorney's Office, the King County Prosecuting Office to make sure we have an aggressive enforcement strategy.
So since then, the mayor's office has sent us a statement. So I want to read. I'm seeing this for the first time right now.
Okay.
After each legislative session, he says, the city council amends the city's criminal code to be consistent with changes to the legislature. And we support amending our local laws to comply with state law. Okay, that's great news in
my
opinion.
That is great.
As directed in our executive order, our primary law enforcement efforts will center on those preying on the most vulnerable, focusing on the people and cartels bringing in and selling these lethal poisonous drugs, especially given limited SPD staffing. But for those suffering from substance use and drug addiction issues, our primary focus is going to be on treatment, expanding services, and connecting them to the proven support solutions needed for recovery. So with this law in place, the statement says, the legislature has provided an additional pathway that may help direct those in need to the treatment they deserve. So we will continue to evaluate this law and its application, our approach, and whether there are additional measures that make sense to address this issue in Seattle. Now, go ahead.
I was just going to say, if you could just help clear things up real quick. So he basically said, we're still going to be focusing on the people dealing the drugs.
Yeah, the bigger fish.
And the Seattle City Attorney is saying, I want to go to the city council and basically get approval to do my job, which is to prosecute people we catch using the drugs.
Yeah, not just the big fish. So it also sounds like the mayor said,
well,
but the mayor said he will follow the state law So he wants to follow the state law, and they'll be in. He wants to be in compliance with the state law, but the focus, I mean, with limited police resources, would be on the bigger fish.
Yes.
So.
And we already know that SPD is suffering from
hundreds of
fewer officers than
exactly.
they need.
Yeah, I think about 500 fewer officers. So my question, or I guess my emphasis right now is city council. Okay, the mayor is at least saying we should be in compliance with state law. City council members, though, there are some city council members, one in particular who has flat out said hard pass, I think, or hard
Tammy
no.
Tammy Morales.
Yeah, Tammy Morales said she does not want to. She's part of that let's decriminalize drugs, which I think is a mistake.
I think it's a mistake, too. And so, but Bruce Harrell there, he did say he wants to comply with state law,
yes,
or there's
said,
a process in place after a state law like that is passed where they can reevaluate their cities.
He said the city council amends the city's criminal code to be consistent with changes the legislature has made. And we, as in the mayor's office, support amending our local laws to comply with state law.
Do you want me to parse that for you?
Yes. So okay. Basically, this is the city council now.
Yeah. So what Bruce Harrell is actually saying is, I am going to push for Seattle to update their laws to match what the state has.
Yeah.
However, we're going to focus on enforcing the dealers.
Yes.
We're going to go after the dealers and the supply side of this equation. I think he said before that, look, nobody wants to be locking anyone up. You know, for using drugs, but I don't want to have it. I don't want to see it on the streets. I don't think that's going to be very effective. So what he's going to be doing is he's going to be battling a city council for whether they're going to update the city code. But even if the city code is updated, what really will change? Because I'll bring you back to, 2011. There's some precedent for Seattle having misdemeanor drug laws on the books and doing diversion. It's called the LEAD program.
Yes.
The law enforcement assisted diversion. So it's pre-trial, pre-booking. You get arrested for drugs, and then they lead you through treatment or whatever program it is, say it's prostitution, to get you out of that pathway. So there's precedent for this. But back in 2018, King County said, hey, we're not gonna go after anyone for drug crimes,
yes,
unless they are selling. So until you actually get law enforcement on board and say, A, we want to do it, which I don't know if SPD does. We haven't asked.
I think SPD does, but I think they have felt that they can't.
Have they?
Okay,
because their policy has been, even from over a decade, it's been, this is a low-level priority for us, right? Which is code for, we're kind of looking the other way.
Yeah.
I don't think there's going to be a whole lot that changes, even if Seattle updates
their code. And that's where I think it's a big, fat mistake. And that's where I think the opportunity is, you've got a bunch of people who are not running again for Seattle City Council. I'm going to keep reminding people that this fall is going to be critical for the city of Seattle.
For how Seattle looks 5 years from now.
Exactly. And we need to have more pragmatic people, more people with common sense on the council who will look at this law and say, this is a good, compromise is not even a good word, but this is a good where this addresses the needs of, you know, trying to crack down on the people who are openly using drugs, which I'm sorry, that does affect people who are, whether it's downtown or anywhere, businesses, and it does affect your feeling of safety.
Also,
correct?
If you know that you're going to get arrested for something. I mean, I know people who have a drug problem are not always thinking completely logically. I get that. If you know that there is a possibility you're going to go to jail for it versus they're just going to look the other way and they're going to go after your dealer, I promise you people are going to have a strong aversion to going to jail.
Yeah, because they'll have to go through detox and withdrawal.
Yes.
Right? And that's a horrible experience. Here's the question that you actually have to ask the city council candidates. Not, do you support Seattle updating their criminal code to make possession and use of drugs a misdemeanor, but do you want Seattle police arresting people for public drug use? That is the question that you have to ask.
Yeah. Well, and I think you're right. But you mentioned the LEAD program. That program is great. And you should put more funding in that kind of program where people, but there are people who say, I don't want to do that. Now what do you do?
Can I just say real fast, I haven't lived in Seattle for 8 years. My wife and I moved out 8 years ago when we had our first child. He was about 6 months old. We didn't want to spend time in the city parks because they were getting dangerous and they weren't safe for kids. Isn't it crazy that we're even having the conversation? should people be arrested for doing drugs right openly? On the street openly?
Yes, it is crazy.
It's like we're living in an upside down world, and I don't know when that happened. It feels like it's in the last 5 minutes, but how crazy is it that that's even a question?
I want to say it's been at least the last 5 years.
But of course people should be arrested if they're doing drugs. They're not safe for the people around them. Give them opportunities to go get fixed.
Yeah, I still think that the emphasis should be offer treatment first. But when you've offered the treatment and tried to get them off and they still won't.
Those are the same things, though. I'm saying you don't leave them on the street to continue doing drugs.
I agree.
I don't think it's completely crazy. I mean, the basic argument for why you don't is, does it improve anyone's life who's using drugs to arrest them over and over again, charge them with a ton of crimes, rack up a bunch of fines? If they don't get treatment, right, you're just cycling them in and out of the jail system.
I hear what you're saying, which is the exact thing that we've done for decades. I hear what you're saying, and I know we have to get to a break, but you're only talking about considering the person using the drugs. This city is lived in by so many more people than are doing drugs. So the idea that I have to occupy the same space with somebody who might be dangerous or might be dangerous to my wife or my child, maybe it's not even their fault. Maybe somebody got them hooked on drugs and now they're not thinking logically. But let's give them an opportunity by removing them from an unsafe situation where they might do something very dangerous to somebody who is just walking down the street. Give them a chance.
It's also not a crime to do something that, you know, other people don't like.
Well, if you're doing drugs,
just to say the inherent nature of using drugs makes those people.
No, I'm saying
there's no criminal precedent for that.
I'm saying if those people are doing illegal activities, which now it's state law, you shouldn't be doing drugs out in the open. If they're doing something illegal, you should take them off the street. Because if my wife and my child are walking down the road and somebody does something crazy, it's not crazy that somebody who's cracked out on drugs does something illogical. That's a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, then don't allow people to drink at Mariners games.
It's a little different.
Okay. Still ahead, we're going to talk about bears. And apparently there are a lot of bear sightings in
one particular
east side.
There's a lot of bears on the streets, too. Get those bears off the street.
That is true. But you and I both have bear stories that we're going to share.
Yeah.
Okay, that's ahead on the G and Ursula Show.
It is
9:50 on the G and Ursula Show. G is off today. Jake Skorheim is in, and we want to talk about bears because the city of Issaquah says recent black bear sightings are a reminder that you need to take steps right now to avoid an encounter. Good idea. And you want to make sure, among other things, that your garbage can lids are on tight.
Yeah.
You don't want to keep pet food laying around.
Sure.
And, oh, by the way, never feed bears or other wild animals. Besides the $1,000 fine, I think you might not survive that dumb move.
Keep your picnic baskets hidden and all that kind of stuff.
What are you talking about? Yeah. So long as the food's tastier than I am, I'm good.
Okay, so I want to talk about bear encounters.
But this is a video based off, right? There was a video from Issaquah.
Yeah, so they sent out a video showing, because there was a recent sighting. Yes, exactly. So that just was this week. And so they had some tips, but I want to know, first of all, if you've had a bear encounter ever.
I have seen bears on, you know.
And do you know what to do?
Yeah, you run. Actually, that's not what you do,
no,
right?
No, you don't.
Okay, so I did have one. It was not a bear encounter. It was the fear of an encounter. I was in Yellowstone a couple of years ago, and my wife and I and my in-laws, who are not super fast-moving people, so it was a wise decision, were on a hiking trail, and we see a sign, and it says, "Beware of grizzlies." There was a grizzly sight here. We were literally like 70 steps from the parking lot.
Yeah.
And we said, nope. And we just turned around. And that's as far as our hike went that day. A grizzly bear.
The sign was enough?
The sign was enough. So I had a grizzly bear sign sighting. And that was enough to make me turn back.
Okay.
I'm starting to understand that you're slightly risk averse.
Well, because, with some things.
Look, I've lived in Seattle and I've had homeless encounters in parks. I had my kids with me. I didn't move out of the city for that. I moved out for housing affordability. You avoided a hike because you saw a bear sign?
Yes. Well, no.
You were reminded.
Grizzly bear sign.
Grizzly bear.
Grizzly bear.
So funny enough, my bear story Well, I have a couple, but one was also at Yellowstone, as I mentioned, and we were there, our sons, Mark and I, and so our sons went way ahead of us. Okay, they can go.
Kids
I'm
are
like
faster.
Your in-laws.
Yeah,
they're really fast. They're walking really far ahead. And then I hear like a big commotion, like people, and all of a sudden it's like bear sightings, bears.
And you're like, where are my kids?
Exactly what I'm saying. Okay, and no, they're adults.
Yeah.
Okay, right? But I'm acting like they're five and, you know, six.
Where's so my babies?
I'm like, Steven, and I'm just bellowing, like, where are you? And I'm freaking out. And my level of anxiety is so high because I'm like, oh, it's going to be my sons.
You're feeling like a mama bear. Right?
Yeah. And it was just a reminder to me, first of all, why I don't go camping.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Besides the fact that there are no electrical outlets, but bears. The bears. But the fact that I had that level of anxiety.
I know.
Just hearing people, you know, and then people were trying to get closer to have a closer look at the bears. And yeah, I saw them. I saw them from a distance, and until I could see my sons, who were just laughing hysterically.
At you?
Yes.
Like, Mom, you look like you saw a bear.
Yeah.
I'm going to read you a quick bear fact. I know we got to go. Here's one quick bear fact. Take a guess. Chef, you guess on this too. How many fatal bear attacks are there per year in the United States?
I don't think I've heard of one in the last five.
Okay. So your guess is none. Ursula?
I'll say 20.
There's one.
Oh, serious?
One per year. Guess how many there are worldwide every year?
How many?
40.
Okay.
Yeah, but 20 of those are drunk Russians that have the bear as a pet.
That might be true.
Stop.
You ever see the videos?
We have so many more bear facts. Should we just come back next
wait.
All bear facts?
Okay, real quick. How about how many bear attacks a year? Do you have that?
There are... I'm sorry. That's 40 bear attacks per year in the world. Every year.
Okay.
This is a 2023 fact.
I know someone who was attacked by a bear right here.
They should get a lottery ticket. That is the... Well, they're not very lucky.
No, it was very unlucky. Yeah. And it's a former Cairo reporter who became a Bellevue councilman and mayor.
Yeah. After the bear attack or before?
Yes.
So he's still with us?
Yes.
Okay.
John Chalmanek. Yes.
Where to get him?
To tell the story.
Oh, my God.
Lake Wenatchee.
Yeah.
Sounds like we need Dwight Schrute on the case for all you Office fans out there.
Bears beats.
Yeah, but given those rare encounters, I still thought for sure my sons were toast.
Yeah, no, they're fine. They're fine. There's a 1 in 2.1 million chance of being attacked by a bear.
Oy. Okay, but still, if you come across a bear, pick up your small children, don't run, stand tall, wave your arms above your head, and shout. Never approach a bear and be sure to leave it a route to escape the area. That's your advice for the day as you go camping this weekend. Okay, still ahead in What's New at 10, we are going to talk about a bunch of things, including holiday travel and what are the symptoms of long COVID. That's coming up next on the G and Ursula Show.